King Nipa begot a son named Brahmadatta through the womb of his wife Kritvi, who was the daughter of Shuka. And Brahmadatta, who was a great yogi, begot a son named Vishvaksena through the womb of his wife Sarasvati. Purport. The Shuka mentioned here is different from the Shukadeva Goswami who spoke Srimad Bhagavatam. Shukadeva Goswami, the son of Vyasadeva, is described in great detail in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana. There it is said that Vyasadeva maintained the daughter of Jabali as his wife, and that they performed penances together for many years. After they performed penances together for many years, he placed his seed in her womb. The child remained in the womb of his mother for 12 years. When the father asked the son to come out, the son replied that he would not come out unless he were completely liberated from the influence of Maya. Vyasadeva then assured the child that he would not be influenced by Maya. But the child did not believe his father, for the father was still attached to his wife and children. Vyasadeva then went to Dwarka and informed the personality of Godhead about his problem, and the personality of Godhead, at Vyasadeva's request, went to Vyasadeva's cottage, where he assured the child in the womb that he would not be influenced by Maya. Thus assured, the child came out, but he immediately went away as a Parivrajaka Acharya. When the father, very much aggrieved, began to follow his saintly boy, Shukadeva Goswami, the boy, created a duplicate Shukadeva, who later entered family life. Follow his saintly boy, Shukadeva Goswami, boy, who later again entered family life. Therefore, the Shuka Kanya, or daughter of Shukadeva, mentioned in this verse, is the daughter of the duplicate or imitation Shukadeva. The original Shukadeva was a lifelong brahmachari. There's one pundit I know who lives in India, like most pundits, traditional pundits do, who reads the Srimad Bhagavatam daily, but he reads it without reading the commentaries. He just reads the verses. Pandit means he knows Sanskrit. He knows Sanskrit very well. So he reads it without any commentary because he wants just to get it in the original form. That's his idea. But here's an example of the many, many examples within Srila Prabhupada's books of how one is liable to be confused, or questions will arise if there's not a purport. Because it's already been stated in the first canto of Bhagavatam how Shukadeva Goswami left home. And here in this verse, he left home means he left home because he didn't want to be entangled in family life. And here we find the daughter of Shuka being described. So then you're left wondering, well, is it a different Shuka, or did Shukadeva go back home? And did he fall back into Maya, or what happened to him? Similarly, the name Jayadratha is given in the verse previously. Three verses previously. And it's not explained here, but presumably it's not the same Jayadratha who was one of the famous villains, one of the famous baddies in the Mahabharata, described in the Mahabharata. So, I forgot this. The cons blew and my mind went somewhere else. I forgot what I was going to say. So let's say, Jai Jagannath Subhadra Baladev, Jai Sri Sri Gaunitai, Jai Sri Radha Nandisha, Jai Giri Gaunitam, Atasmite Gyanam Aprohanam Cha. Hmm. So, here it's clarified with reference from Brahma Vaivarta Purana that the Shuka mentioned here is in fact the descendant of Vyasadeva, but facsimile version with a different program to the original. And actually many these names, we'll often find that the same name is given to different people, just like Janak, Janaka. All the king, it's not just one king Janaka, but there are many. Janaka is, the famous Janaka is who?
Sita's father.
The father of Sita. There, in that line, all there, there's Janaka 1, Janaka 2, Janaka 3, 4, 5, there's so many. There's one demon in the mentioned in Bhagavatam whose name is Hayagriva. That's also the name of one of the Vishnu avatars. So some clarification from the commentators may be needed. Of course, it's understood that when Hayagriva is mentioned as one of the demons, Srila Prabhupada doesn't comment. He doesn't add any comment, and I'm not sure if the previous commentators do. But it's just understood, presumably, that the reader is not so stupid that he would think that Hayagriva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has become a demon. Of course, the Srimad Bhagavatam was traditionally spoken among pious people. Nowadays, well, you have to be pious to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, and even by hearing, you become pious. But due to various impieties, well, the one's liable to misunderstand. Therefore, the traditional system is to actually not to read the book by oneself, but to have it read and explained to one. That was the truth. Most in traditional India, most people didn't read anyway. Or reading means Sanskritam. It's not something for every grocer. So there's Vaishyas. They weren't expected to know Sanskrit. That's that narration is there of Narottam Das, when, who was that king? He brought the Ganga Narayan Chakrabarti and big scholars to, brought a whole band of scholars to debate with Narottam and defeat him. So Ganga Narayan and others who were Brahmanas, which was the whole point, that Narottam was from a non-Brahmana family and he was initiating Brahmanas, which was a sacrilege to the in the eyes of the smarter Brahmanas. So they came, and the word came out that they were coming to challenge Narottam too. So to save their guru from this inconvenience, Ganga Narayan and others who were Brahmins dressed as, or they set up stalls along the way selling pan, which is a necessity for Brahminical life in the smarter system. So, and pots, clay pots, that's also required because they have to cook and they're not going to carry pots around with them, nor are they going to use pots used by other castes or even by other Brahmins who are not as elevated as themselves. Every Brahmin caste thinks that all within the Brahmin caste there are subcastes. I mean, there are different divisions of Brahmanas, so every subcaste thinks that, well, we're the actual Brahmins and the others, they're just pretending. They're not really Brahmins at all. So it's a caste-ridden. It's ridden through with the old caste system. And even today, it's going on. Not as seriously as before. So anyway, that you know the story probably, how they, knowing that the Brahmins would stop at these shops, then Ganga Narayan, who is that? I can't remember. they set up shop, and the pundits came to them, and they were the shopkeepers, the so-called shopkeepers, replied in Sanskrit. And they were surprised, because you don't expect shopkeepers to speak in Sanskrit. They just know a little arithmetic, and that's all they need to know, actually. And whatever the goods they may be selling. And they replied in Sanskrit, and they were surprised. Well, how do you know Sanskrit? And the disciples of Narottam Das, why shouldn't we know? We have such a guru. So somehow, these shopkeepers managed to engage them in debate, and they defeated them on all the points that they were going to challenge Narottam Das on. And they were ready to decamp with their high-class tails between their high-class legs. when they ordered not to. Hey, wait a minute, you can't just leave like that. You've got to go and surrender. You can't get away so easily. They thought, if these are his shopkeeper disciples, what's Narottam going to be like? You know, we're going to get anywhere near there. We're going to be humiliated. But then Durga Devi, who they were Shaktas, worshippers of Durga. So Durga herself appeared in a dream to the king and said, hey, wait a minute, you can't leave here. You've got to go and surrender to Narottam. Otherwise, you know that sword I've got in my hand? Well, I'm going to bless you with it. Apply it to your neck unless you go surrender to Narottam. So, yes, the brahmanas, what was the point? I can't remember. Anyway, that commentaries, yeah. Okay, thank you. Yeah, so the commentaries, they provide the background in case there are any misunderstandings. Not only if they're misunderstood, but they may bring out subtle points. Srimad Bhagavatam, what is the point of Bhagavatam? Aham Vedmi Shuko Veti Vyasa Veti Na Veti Va Bhaktya Bhagavata Grahyam Nameja Nacha Tikaya. Lord Shiva says, I understand the Bhagavatam. Shukadeva Goswami, he understands. Maybe Vyasadeva understands, I'm not quite sure. But anyway, bhakti is the means to approach Bhagavatam. One can understand through bhakti. Not simply through studying commentaries and one's own intelligence. So the commentaries are there to help us understand, but even then, we need to be guided to understand the commentaries, because for the conditioned soul, the tendency to misunderstand is amazing. How it's possible to squeeze some different kinds of meanings out of the text. Srila Prabhupada's books are written in an unambiguous manner, which that is the hallmark of the Mayavadi's words is that they're ambiguous. And it leaves you suspended, Trishanku style, in between sky and land, and not really wondering what's going on. And then they come to say, well, everything is just actually, it can't be expressed by words, and then everything's vague, deliberately unclear. But Srila Prabhupada made it deliberately clear, because Srimad Bhagavatam is supposed to give it knowledge. Knowledge means assurance, clarity, clear perception. But even then, we see that Srila Prabhupada's purports can be misunderstood. Oh, they're to help one understand, but if one is determined to misunderstand, then he'll always misunderstand. One may just be stupid, or one may be determined to misunderstand. So one will either misunderstand by... There are different ways of misunderstanding. One way is to apparently accept what the speaker is saying, but to misinterpret it or to get the wrong meaning out of it. And another way is to reject what the speaker says altogether. So that's quite possible. And therefore, words, the Mayavadis say, oh, it's just words, everything's just words, it doesn't really, it can't be expressed, but the Vaishnav understanding is quite different. Words are essential. And the understanding of what words means and how they're used in different contexts and how the exact precise word needs to be employed, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made such a big issue of this that he said he wanted to make a dictionary, encyclopedic dictionary of words. He wanted to make a Vaishnava encyclopedia, and the most important section was definition of words. Because people, they misunderstand. Just like if we say to people, do you believe in God? Some people say yes, and some people not say no, but what do they mean by God, first of all? Or often when people say to me, well, I don't believe in God, then I agree with them, jokingly, and say, well, or I ask them, I say that, well, I probably don't believe in the God that you also don't believe in. Because the idea of God in the Western world is not Krishna, but some nasty, I mean, they say he's nice, but I mean, the character portrayed is rather nasty, actually. I mean, he creates you, he gives you one chance, and if you fluff it, which you're likely to do, unless you, yeah, I mean, the odds are stacked against you, you know, there are like several thousand churches, unless you belong to the right one, it's like a real tough lottery, then you're burning hell forever. And he's got a beard, and I mean, it looks really nasty. So, this may sound offensive, but I mean, actually, the concept of God is not really. I mean, you can believe it if you like, but it's this God. This God is worth believing in. This young Shamasundaram Achintya Guna Swarupam, this beautiful blackish boy, his form is composed of inconceivable transcendental qualities. So, with Radha. So this God is, even this Nietzsche, who is the committed atheist who declared God to be dead, said, I would believe in a God who danced, but the knowledge of the dancing God didn't come until he was long since incarcerated in hell. But there's hope for him. Not forever. He can come back again after he's done his term. Because God is not such a bad God as the one he didn't believe in. So terms, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, all these terms, we say bhakti. We use the term bhakti. And every Indian person, except maybe some Muslims and tribals, they know the word bhakti. Everyone knows the word bhakti. But it's misunderstood. Unless it is defined to one by a devotee, then it must be misunderstood. And people think bhakti, it means a general sense of devotion. It means you have matri bhakti, devotion to your mother, or bhakti for various demigods, desha bhakti, devotion to your country, and probably they're going to start using, or if they haven't started using it already, for the regional cricket teams which have been introduced recently as a part of modern Indian culture. So the terms are, all these terms, all important terms, are misused. Even the word Krishna, how much is that misunderstood? Look up in the dictionary, Krishna, a Hindu god, the eighth avatar of Vishnu. And then, there's so many misinterpretations. Then we have the Devi Bhagavat, which describes Vishnu as everything is coming from Devi. Everything is coming from Durga. She's the origin. And Vishnu is just a spin-off. The real thing is Durga. This is an invented book, invented by the Shaktas, the worshippers of Durga, imitation of Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he wanted to make this encyclopedic dictionary. Actually, the work had already been started by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But he wanted to expand that. Because without properly understanding what we're saying, we can't properly understand anything. I was told recently, here's just to give an example. Well, there are many examples. It's so easy to misunderstand. Just like, for instance, for years until last plenary GBC meeting in Mayapur, the Gayatri mantra sheets were being distributed with the last word of the third mantra we chant being written as Guru, G-U-R-O-H. Somehow or other, maybe from misunderstanding, I don't know how they got it, but misunderstanding from Srila Prabhupada. If you listen to Srila Prabhupada saying it, which you're not supposed to do unless you're an initiated Brahmana, then it's not quite clear, but actually the word is Guru, and it has a completely different meaning. In fact, it doesn't make any sense at all to say Guruhu instead of Guruhu. So the tendency to misunderstand is so strong that the acharyas, well, that's one major reason for giving purports. Of course, there are others also, just like to bring out the subtle points. Even that, although clearly Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. The original form of the Personality of Godhead is clearly explained in the Bhagavatam. But Jiva Goswami, he goes to great lengths to show that that's exactly what it means. Others give a different, they give their interpretation. They say it doesn't mean that. Still, we accept Vishnu as the fountainhead of all forms. So the Bhagavatam itself addresses various philosophical misconceptions, and then they're further addressed, throughout the Bhagavatam, but especially in the presence of the personified Vedas, and that is elaborated upon more by the acharyas, and then they bring out various subtle points, just especially when the gopis are speaking, for instance. They often speak to Krishna in subtly sarcastic language, and this is brought out by the acharyas, is also explained, and how different words can have different meanings, and the shloka can be understood in different ways depending on how you take the word. And like this, Krishna Tula Bhagavat Bibhu Sarva Shray Prati Shloke Prati Akare Nana Artha Khoi. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that Bhagavatam is the same, on the same level as Krishna. It is like Krishna, powerful, and can give shelter to all. In every verse and every syllable, there are various meanings. So, Bhagavatam, Bhaktya Bhagavata, Grahya, can be understood by devotees. The Mayavadis, they must misunderstand. People who come with a different agenda, with their own preconceived agenda to the Bhagavatam, from the very beginning, they misunderstand. And everything is seen through the lens of their envy of Krishna, their distorted perception of Krishna. They insist on understanding Krishna according to their own misconception. In other words, they want to, from the beginning, they make themselves, they presume themselves greater than Krishna, greater than Vyasadeva, And in this way, from the very beginning, their study of Bhagavatam is simply envious. So explanation is required to bring out all the points. Recently there was a controversy within the International Society for Krishna Consciousness regarding a proposal to have footnotes or annotations to certain passages of Srila Prabhupada's books that, if taken out of context, might seem shocking. Only one was suggested, but it was suggested there were others in this vein. The particular text, which is just one line in Prabhupada's books, and it's definitely not the essence of Srila Prabhupada's teachings, but it's become very famous because it was suggested that there should be a footnote within the book to explain it, is that women like men who are very expert in rape. So, of course, Srila Prabhupada didn't descend from the spiritual world to propagate this all over the world, that Srila Prabhupada's most important teaching is that women like men who are very expert in rape, but it became the center of attention, because if taken out of context, it seems quite shocking. So the move to have footnotes in Srila Prabhupada's books has, at least for the time being, been shelved. Although this kind of attempt may come again. But actually I thought, well, that's a very good idea. We should have time for a further commentary on Prabhupada's books. Why just this one line? Every single word of it is of Prabhupada's books is worshipable. And some may be understood, some may be more liable to be misunderstood than others also. There's a purport in the fourth canto. When discussing this topic with a devotee, I gave the example that there's, in the fourth canto, Srila Prabhupada makes a humorous remark in one purport that Sati was very fortunate because her husband, Lord Shiva, didn't take all her ornaments and sell them to buy ganja. So obviously it's a humorous remark. They're just like the so-called followers of Lord Shiva. They may do that. So I said that, well, someone could, it's conceivable that someone could misunderstand this, because the power for human misunderstanding is practically unlimited, said Einstein. That's an Einstein quote. And Einstein said that both the universe and human stupidity are unlimited. And there's more to the quote. And I'm not sure about the first. He qualified it further. That's good. He said quite a few good things. An intelligent guy. He didn't know Krishna, obviously, but he was obviously an intelligent person. Insights into the human or the material condition. So then the devotee told me that actually he had that experience, that someone in Mauritius or somewhere had actually been very angry that this should be expunged from these books. It's very offensive to Lord Shiva to suggest that he would sell his wife's ornaments to buy ganja. But it's to be understood that Srila Prabhupada is humorously joking. I mean, it's not, you might say it's not really proper to joke about Lord Shiva, but for Prabhupada, he can do it. We can't do it. We can quote Prabhupada as having said that, but we shouldn't make jokes about our acharyas, about the great devotees. But Prabhupada, he can do that. And then judge. But that may require an explanation also. And actually, every major commentary on any work is often followed as a matter of worship by subsequent generations of disciples by further commentary. It's an act of worship. If one does it as, well, our acharya made this mistake and we should have to change it? Or In some sense, that may be there. No, not exactly. No one should ever say Maya Acharya made a mistake. Even if he apparently does. It's just not the proper etiquette to say that. But in the Acharya's purports, we often find that Vyasadeva himself, Abhadhavyatyapi, in Bhagavatam it's stated that the text of the Bhagavatam, even if imperfectly composed, so even in Vyasadeva's writing, there is sometimes a point that seems doesn't seem to make any sense, or seems contradictory, or the usage of Sanskrit is irregular. Yes, this use of Sanskrit is irregular, which is allowable in poetry. Then the Acharyas, they just make the note, Arsha Prayog, the great person or persons have used the language like this. They don't say, well, it's a mistake, it should actually be. Or they may say, here this word is to be understood as, and they'll give another word. And then everything's clear. They don't say the Acharya made a mistake, nor did he make a mistake. He had a purpose. It's understood he had a purpose for saying like that, but although others may misunderstand, in case others misunderstand, then the later Acharyas, they clarify it. So just like with this whole big hullabaloo over a woman likes a man who is expert in rape, it could just be stated in a commentary, not in Prabhupada's books, in a separate book, that women like men who are very expert in aggressive seduction. And that should make the matter clear. Of course, you may need a sub-commentary on that also. But, you know, it can go on forever, but it's supposed to be for... It's expected that the reader has some level of sympathy if the reader is not completely determined to refute and reject everything that's said, if the reader is a person who is at least what we would call open-minded, then they can accept that this is all right, that Srila Prabhupada is a great Acharya, he's a great pure devotee, Paramahamsa, and he's not advocating rape. He's making a statement here. You have to see the whole thing in context. Especially if anyone's read up to four cantos, you can understand that Srila Prabhupada, if they've read that far, they can understand that what he's presenting is a fully sublime subject matter, and he's definitely not, you know, like some advocating something which in any civilized society is understood to be something horrible. So I didn't get to the point of what's said about Shukadev here. Yeah, well, Shukadev here. Ambedi, Shukovedi, Shukadev. Well, that's another whole class, I guess. There's no time now. I just had a little introduction and then didn't have time to get through to the class. Well, Hare Krishna. All glories to Shukadev Goswami. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Is there any question or comment about this, please?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Speculation, one guy from India, he comes here sometimes. He's actually from the place of Krishna. He says everyone's here.
From Mathura, Vrindavan.
Yeah, somewhere near there. And he said every year when she was there or something, they have a little bit of a lick up of alcohol. I was like, how's that possible? He was like, it's alcohol, we just do it. And hemp.
They offer, in a Shiva temple in Mathura area, they offer alcohol and
hemp.
Bhain, I guess that's called locally. Well, that's required for sadhus. You can get bhang ice cream in Vrindavan. Lollipops.
That doesn't intoxicate you though, does it? Intoxicate,
oh, sure it does. People. That's why they take it. It does intoxicate, but that's not for Lord Shiva. He doesn't take it. That's the point. His so-called followers take it. It's supposed to be good for meditation. It's supposed to make the mind very calm. It's also... So it's said, if you take it long enough, it has anaphrodisiac properties.
Yeah, it used to be ancient,
but anyway, we don't recommend it. Yeah. Not good for devotees of Vishnu. It's also not good for devotees of Shiva. It's not good for anyone. But The devotees of Lord Shiva, they're addicted to all kinds of things which are not good for them. So, the Vaishnavas are the best devotees of Lord Shiva because they worship him as the supreme Vaishnava. Alright, anything? Yo, yes, please.
I don't know whether I'm misunderstanding, but it says down here that the child remained in the womb of his mother for 12 years.
Yeah, he remained in the womb of his mother for 12 years. Well, that sounds unlikely, doesn't it? But then, Brahmadatta is mentioned here as a yogi, and Shukdev Goswami is also a yogi, so they can do all kinds of things that sound unlikely. When I first went to Bombay, I was walking on the beach and I saw couple of hands like this sticking up out of the sand. So I asked what that was. I said, well, that's a yogi. He goes under the sand for some time, and after some time they take him out. There's a few coins people throw down. So it was original way of making a living, I guess. But yogis can do all kinds of things. That's the point. He didn't want to come out because he thought there's so much maya out there. And Vyasadeva's also in Maya. He was really heavy, you know. Vyasadeva's the incarnation of God, but he didn't want to associate with him. He's a household. He's a real heavy brahmachari. Mm-hmm. So he didn't come out for 12 years.
More than
12 years.
In those days it happened.
In those days it could happen. Yeah, even now there are yogis who could do all... There are yogis do all kinds of things. I remember seeing as a kid on the TV, a yogi, they put him in a vacuum. And then they kept coming back every 10 minutes. They were doing, you know, it's one of these shows, they show all kinds of things. And then the guy was still there, and after 40 minutes or so, he tap, and he came out. So he's 40 minutes in a vacuum. None of us could live for 4 minutes in a vacuum, but a yogi can. They can control their breath. You don't believe it? Well,
no, I believe it.
All right.
But I think we better do this as this is 9 months, and that's enough.
Yeah, we just believe it, that's all. We just accept that there are so many things which are inconceivable, even about what we know about this world, what to speak of things we don't know about. I mean, this scientific outlook that everything's conceivable, it's a big bluff, actually, because we're almost... more than 80 years, science has been stuck with the inconceivable, even in studying matter. They still teach you all this classical physics, because that's all anyone can ever understand anyway, because at all the quantum level, it doesn't make any sense to human understanding. But they're stuck with it. And, well, they do understand it to some extent, otherwise they couldn't be still studying it, or they couldn't have got into it in the first place. But it brings up all kinds of apparent impossibilities, and that's just dealing with... This is also dealing with matter. Shukadeva Goswami staying in the womb. So there may be many things. You don't have to be a Hare Krishna devotee to understand that. I mean, there are many people in the world who believe in fairies and dragons and all kinds of things like elves. They don't believe the modern scientific outlook. I also, as a kid, I thought, well, there's so many stories of this all over the world, then it's probably true. In Ireland, at least until recently, everyone believed in leprechauns because, you know, they were quite apparent. They didn't show themselves much, but they were doing all kinds of things. In Iceland still today, everyone believes in elves, and because, you know, it's the kind of place where they hang out. It's the country's mostly wild and full of volcanoes and hot springs and all kinds of things, and mountains. And so one devotee was preaching there, I said, well, it must be easy for the people there to believe in mystic apparitions, and all, they say, yeah, too much. They're too much into that. But everyone in the country. And another devotee was preaching, told me, everyone, university professors, they have no problem in accepting this, anything that we tell them. All this kind of thing. Because for them, it's quite possible. It's a matter of the culture that we live in. And previously, and until the modern mechanistic outlook became, or it took over the educational system and the whole way of thinking of the world, all over the world, everyone, what is this story? Jack and the Beanstalk. Everyone know that? Any English people here? It's part of English folklore. There's no English people in Central London. Anyway, I won't tell the story here, but it's based on the understanding that there's a huge vine, or whatever you want to call it, which grows up into the clouds. There's a big giant up there who eats people and so on. So all this kind of thing. This, how did this, what's that called, Hobbits, Lord of the Rings, that all became very popular. You couldn't become popular unless people could at least theoretically accept the existence of such beings. Nowadays it's Harry Potter, right?
Philians.
Huh?
That's where the giants are from, the Philians.
Is it? That's from Hobbit lore, is it? Yeah.
We found out skeletons of them in...
Oh, there's all kinds of things. There's all dinosaurs are still seen today, so I met someone at Heathrow Airport a couple of years ago, and he was asking about me, what are you doing, where are you from, all this kind of thing. I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm going to Africa to look for dinosaurs. You're serious? Because they are seen even today. Prabhupada said there's no species which are extinct. There's all kinds of things which... They're still teaching in the schools this extremely narrow worldview, which it seems increasingly no one in the world believes in. There's a whole huge subculture going on of... I guess it's all, what do you call it, mixed up with New Age and this and that. Yeah, you have a question. All right. Respect the rank. Go ahead.
I'm just wondering, Maharaj, if you can comment.
What's that said in the military? Respect the rank, something like that? Anyway, comment on what?
The fact that Shukadeva Goswami is saying that Srila Vyasadeva is in Maya.
Well, that's the kind of thing we need to comment on further, isn't it? It's a tough one. A lot of research is needed, actually. What did the Acharyas say? Is it Shukadev's outlook? Is that his transcendental vision? Maybe because he was at that time an impersonalist. So just like even today in the original Shankara Sampradaya, they say spiritual life begins with sannyas. Atato Brahma Jignasa means now you have to inquire into Brahman, and to do it now means now it's time to take sannyas. Because you can't be self-realized if you're in family life. That's the input. If you're living with Maya, then how can you be out of Maya? That's the Shankara Sampradaya, that's the impersonalist way of thinking. There's a possible explanation. But that's, it's actually just prolongs, or what's the word? It reinforces the Mayic outlook by seeing family, wife, etc. as Maya. It reinforces the dualistic outlook that there is Krishna and Maya, and there is spirit and Maya, and it reinforces that dualistic outlook which is opposed to undifferentiated monism, and it also reinforces the non-recognition of Krishna, because the Vaishnava outlook is to see that the family members are also part and parcel of Krishna and to be respected as servants of Krishna. Whereas in the Shankara Sampradaya, it's just reject. That's all. So they're actually living with Maya in their mind by seeing a difference between Krishna and his energies. Yeah, all right, we'll take one last question.
Very similar question. How do Prabhupada understand that Vyasadeva might or might not understand?
It's a commonly asked question. Well, the Bhagavatam, that's it. The Bhagavatam, not everything is stated up front. Not everything. Just like Radharani's name is not mentioned in the Bhagavatam. The Acharyas find Radharani there. Vyasadeva? Maybe he knows, maybe he doesn't. Lord Shiva says. He's the instrument for, or the means by which the Bhagavatam is composed. But the highest understanding, well, maybe Vyasa knows and maybe he doesn't. Maybe Narayan knows and maybe he doesn't. Radha Mahima Prema Rasha Shima Jagate Janatoke Janatoke. Who could have described the glories of Radharani to the world except Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Other incarnate, other avatars were not going to do that. So that's a high topic.
That's in the back of the key, that no one else can understand a bit apart from Krishna.
Yeah. Hare Krishna.